Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up. I am your host for the day, Luke Coulson. And today we're joined by Michelle Glogovac. Glogovac, is that right? Glogovac?
That's right. Yes, you did it.
Where's that from, Michelle?
It's Serbian. It's my husband's name.
I like that. It's a good second name. We say surname in England. What do you say in America? I feel like you don't say surname.
Last name.
Yeah.
See? Last name.
So many cultural differences from England to American that it's very confusing. And tell us where you are in the world.
I'm in San Jose, just north of you.
We were just talking offline that we're complaining because I'm California. I've come for the weather and it's positively freezing this week and everyone's complaining. And the LA.
We have freeze warnings.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And the LA folks are excited because they get to wear their one jacket for the week. You know,
well, I've got my turtleneck on. I look like I'm in the snow.
I'm wrapped up in a large hoodie. So thanks so much for coming on the show. Our podcast is all about surviving life-changing events and experiences. This can be like a lifelong process, many experiences, a one-off, can be something that happened when you were a kid, something that happened last week, something that's still happening now, physical, emotional, mental. You know, we've had 100 guests or more on the show with all sorts of amazing stories. So I guess I will pose the question to you with all of that. Where would you like to begin?
You know, I listened to your episodes before and I knew that was going to be the question. I went, oh shit, where do I begin?
Yeah.
Because I know there was the health scare.
Yeah.
And yet, as I look back at life and everything that I've literally been through, I went, oh, there's been a lot of moments where it could have fucked up my life. Did I allow it to? No, I'm going to say no because I'm here today talking to you. Mm. And so I've gotten through it.
Yes.
We can start at childhood when my father passed away when I was 7 years old.
Yeah, wow. That's hard as hell. How was that for you?
It was hard as hell. It was, he had pancreatic cancer and he died 12 days after being diagnosed.
That is hardcore. So I'm assuming your father wasn't particularly old when that happened. My father died of pancreatic cancer when he was 80 and died 5 days after being diagnosed.
He was only 52.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. That's not that's not far from where I'm heading, you know. And pancreatic cancer is a number one killer for guys as well. It's an absolute. Can I ask a personal question? Was he in was he in bad health? Was there drinking, stuff like that? Or was it real just like not fair that he got that?
There was drinking and there was a lot of smoking. And now that I'm, 3 packs a day. Mm-hmm. And now as I get older, I'm in the process of getting genetic testing. And right away, the counselor said, well, do you smoke? And I went, no, dear God, no.
Yeah.
Like I've seen what it's done.
Isn't that extraordinary? Well, it's funny. Yeah. I know we're only just starting this episode, but we're already talking about all these relatable things is that, you know, My father, at the end of the day, you know, he probably could have gone on for a few more years. It was just drinking and smoking. He just couldn't stop. Did that stop me? No, I had my own alcohol journey, which only really stopped a few years ago. And it's funny, isn't it? As much as you can see something, somebody doing something, when we've got our own shit going on, sometimes you just take the path. You know what I mean? So good on you for, good on you for seeing that and not getting sucked into a world of, you know, bad health. So as a 7 year old, I mean, I have two kids around about that age, a little bit older. That's your parents are your world, aren't they?
Yeah. And I was very much a daddy's girl. it was definitely hard because my mother, she was 13 years younger than my father. So for her, this was a, oh, now it's time to sow my oats type of period of time.
Yes.
So I became a second mom to my younger brother. Oh. There was more alcoholism. Oh. There were boyfriends. It was a really shitty time. And it's not actually something that I talk about very frequently. And yet this year I've decided, you know, this is part of my story. I should be talking about this because it really has molded me into who I am today. You know, she's never been a proponent of therapy. And I think that therapy is what has gotten me to where I am today.
Is she still around, your mom?
She is.
And how does she feel about you talking about this? And how's your relationship with her?
We did not speak for 10 years. And it's only been in the past year that we have seen each other, spoken, and she met my kids for the first time.
Get the fuck out of here.
And they are 7 and 8.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So was that her leaving or was that you being utterly resentful and or a mixture of both?
It was me finally realizing that I didn't have to put up with certain things anymore and creating boundaries. It was my husband and I getting married and there being a lot of leading up to, we got engaged 6 years after we started getting together. And then it was 6 months till the wedding. So it was like, oh, I've waited this long. Yeah. Let's get freaking married now. Yeah. And from the get-go, it was, well, are you inviting your half-sister? That was the first question, not congratulations, because she didn't like her. And then it was, how come you're not inviting me to write invitations?
Yeah.
I'm like, because it's 100 envelopes. Yeah. Give me a freaking break.
Yeah.
And then the day of the wedding, my stepdad, because he works for the Catholic Church, I thought it would be nice to have him officiate.
Yeah.
He went off script and invited her up to be part of the ceremony. Shit. And I lost it. I said, this is it. And then there were things that were said to other members of the family, to guests. And I said, I'm done.
Yeah.
This was my day and you tried to kill it.
Tried to make it about her, it sounds like, in a big way, right? We had a guest on the show who you know, emancipated, just like divorced her parents when she was quite young, because she had the wherewithal to see that all they offered her was toxicity and emotional abuse. I mean, what an amazing thing. We live in a world now, I think, where people can talk much more openly about that. And I love that you realize the boundaries. This woman, my mother, right, you're thinking, isn't giving me anything but grief, pain, anger, resentment. There's nothing positive coming from this. So why do I need that in my life? So it's amazing that you made that choice. And how's the kind of the reunion going then in the last year?
It's really, I do it for my kids because now that they're at that age where they go, well, do we not have grandparents?
Interesting.
And I feel really bad because on my husband's side, they've both passed. My father has passed. And you have a grandmother. Tough. I guess you can meet her. But even they realize some of the things that are said, they're like, that's not okay. And, you know, granted, she's, you know, in her 70s and things that come out of her mouth are simply not appropriate. And, you know, to tell my kids over and over that you're so skinny, so skinny. And they're like, but what does she mean we're skinny? Like,
that's awful.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah, of course not.
So it's then having to explain to them. Why is it that grandma said this to you?
It's so tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so we know,
because I don't want them to live that cycle either.
Of course not. I mean, we're the same. And it's kind of, we know as parents now in this generation with children the age that our kids are at, talking about weight in any form in a negative way is just, it's just awful. Like there's all this research and stuff that we now know. But of course you didn't know any of that when you were a kid. And how was growing up with your father not there anymore and your mum kind of absent, how was that, and what happened to you through your teens and as you got older? Like we get traumatized from that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think that for me, I dug my head down and I worked. In high school, I had 2 jobs.
Wow.
I got enough credits during the school year that I could have a half day in my senior year. I went to college.
Wow.
I worked through college. I worked through summer school. I didn't want to move back home.
Wow.
And that was really my whole goal. When I graduated college, I was put on salary by the part-time job that turned into the full-time job. Wow. And I made it my career for 18 years because I could live off of it. And I didn't have to move home and I was done. You know, I didn't need to rely on anybody.
So I feel like there's a crossroads because, again, I'm always talking about people we've spoken to and guests we've had on. But, you know, some of the guests, but also my story was trauma that came out in misbehaving, right? So it sounds like you went the other way. It's either like, I've got to fend for myself here and I need to get, I'm now going to be the independent person, which is congratulations on that, by the way. But I was like, I'm a worthless piece of shit. I'm going to become a drug addict. That's my way of coping with it, right? Because I didn't feel that I had been empowered enough in order to make my own way without help, right? So it's kind of, it's crazy, isn't it, how everything and everyone's different. So it's amazing that you were able to do that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It means a lot. I think that also in seeing when my father passed, she didn't know how to write a check.
Yeah. Wow.
And Google wasn't around back then, but somehow I had looked enough at what was going on that I could write the checks and I could forge her name. So I would just write the bills at the end of the month. I would sign her name to the checks and mail them off.
Wow.
And you know, that's something I don't even think of today, but maybe that's why I hate reconciling the checkbook every month.
You became the parent. And how old was your sibling?
Yeah. He was 5 at the time.
Oh, wow.
He's 2 years younger.
Isn't that amazing? That in itself is an episode. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so like childhood, like ups and downs are so crazy. And it's amazing when we realize as we get older. For me, it was when I had my kids and I started to really put the pieces together of everything that I'd been through and how I wanted to give them a different and better experience. You know, and I'm on very good terms with my mum. We've never fallen out. I love her to pieces. She listens to every episode. So I'm always trying to caveat this stuff with like, you know, my mum did the best she could. She did. I had a great upbringing. My father and I had some issues and there was definitely some bullying and emotional abuse going on there. And that really, really, really fucked me up. And I will never do that to my children. I will empower my children. I will give them confidence. I will make them feel safe at all times. And I will shower them with love. And if they want to go off the rails as a result of that, I've done my bit. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I can safely say that I tried my best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting that once you have children, you just see everything differently.
Yeah, you do.
You know, I think that I always said, oh, well, this was her time to, you know, sow her oats and okay. Mm. And now that I have children, I'm like, how could you even contemplate, you know, going out or bringing someone into the home?
Like,
it baffles me because my mindset is my husband's now older than what my father's age when he passed.
Yeah.
So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, can I financially support my children, ensure that we don't have to move, you know, have a stable home if something were to happen to him?
Yeah.
And yet that wasn't the thought process, it seems.
No.
And the funny part is that she will now say today, you know, it wasn't all bad.
Yeah.
There were good times.
Yeah.
I sent her over Christmas. I found this, it's a candle set that when you turn on when you light the candles, the angel goes around and it makes a dinging.
Oh yeah.
And it reminded me, it was a German thing that I found in Solvang and it reminded me of childhood. And I sent her the picture and I said, look at what I found. I've been looking for one of these for years. And her response was, see, there were good memories.
The candle with the angel spinning around the top.
That was the good memory.
It seems like you put your kids first and they're your priority. And, you know, I separated 6 years ago. I have a long-term girlfriend now, which, you know, we made sure everyone was happy in the situation before our kids got introduced to her. And similarly, my ex-wife has a long-term boyfriend. And that's all been integrated and it's been done in the right way. And the kids are better for that. They understand, they feel safe. These people aren't random. In my community here, there's a lot of separation going on. There's a lot of divorce going on. And it's very interesting because, again, not judging anybody because everyone's got their own story. But there are a few couples where they're just off making up for lost time. And the kids right in the middle, not knowing where the mum is, not knowing where the dad is. And it breaks my heart.
And it's funny, my husband has an ex-wife and two children. I'm a stepmom to a 25-year-old and a 21-year-old.
Oh, wow.
And we did the same thing where it was, you know, we're going to wait and make sure that we are right. Yeah. And this is going somewhere before I meet the children. And then I met the ex and, you know, we spent time together. And it's not always roses.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not best friends by any means.
Yeah.
But she knows who I am. The kids know. And, you know, I'm that other reliable co-parent who is always there.
Yeah.
So I completely get that as well. And the importance of just being there and letting the kids know that we're all on the same page.
100%, you know. So let's move on from our amazing parenting.
We're so good.
Well done us, as the kids scream and shout and I lose track of where my 14-year-old is and, you know, whatever. So what's next for you? Where are we in your trajectory into your teens through college and then into your 20s? What does that start to look like? What's the next up and down for you?
A lot of working. I went into the corporate world and I sold jet fuel to corporate flight departments for 18 years.
Wow.
Because I could walk to the airport from college and didn't need a car and needed a part-time job.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? What a sort of anti-establishment environmental job selling fuel to the planes. You know what I mean?
I kept the rich and famous in the air and saved them money.
Yeah, wow.
For 18 years.
That's an amazing job. I've never met anyone that does that job. That's incredible.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun, especially I went to school at UC Santa Barbara. So I met a lot of celebrities. And that was a blast to be a 21-year-old, you know, meeting Michael Jordan, you know, just meeting all of these different people, Michael Jackson, Joe Montana. These were all clients that would come in and then they knew my name.
That's
and I was like,
nuts.
This is really freaking cool.
That's so crazy. Wow.
Don't ask them today, though. I doubt that anybody knows who I am.
No, we'll be like the guy, you know, the plane gas lady, the plane fuel lady. Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness.
And then got married. I moved around a lot because I was not afraid to. I had grown up in a very small town, Paradise. It burnt down in 2018.
Shit. It did burn down. Completely burnt down.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was my childhood city. My mom still actually lives there and has rebuilt.
Wow.
There's so many things coming up. My goodness, Luke.
let me pause you there for a second. Was your mom there when the fire came? Did she evacuate?
Yes.
And then she lost everything?
Yes.
Holy
everything.
Shit.
Yeah. Bloody and that would have been, you know what, that was about the time I had told her that I had children. And then it was when I remember the day that the fire started, I had woken up, my husband was traveling, and I looked out the window and I thought, it's really windy and just looks odd. What's going on? Turned on the news, and they say there's a fire heading towards Paradise. And I picked up the phone and I called her. But we had not spoken really at all. And that was what prompted me saying, do you need a place to stay? You're welcome to come here.
Wow.
Funny fact, though, later, the news did an interview with my stepdad and was like, what were you guys thinking? He's like, we don't know. We had nowhere to go.
Oh, come on. Come on.
But I offered my house, but cool.
Oh, that sucked.
Bygones.
And what year was that fire for our listeners?
2018.
That's right. And I remember seeing that on the news and the whole place was completely burnt to a crisp. And there was all horses. Yeah. They were trying to get the horses out. And the stables and it was like a movie. It was literally like a movie. That's just,
it's unrecognizable today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane, isn't it? So did she turn down the offer of staying at your house?
Oh yeah. She turned down the offer. Yeah. And then she complains about how they stayed in some RV on a property that belonged to someone else
when she could have like, just come complain. And stayed at your house.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
Yeah, you could have met your grandkids. It's fine.
Yeah,
no
that's
deal.
I think that's called martyrism. But anyway, that's a whole different story. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to me. No.
Yeah, back to you for sure. Yeah.
So I moved around. I went from Santa Barbara to Santa Maria to Los Angeles to Houston to Chicago. And while I was in Chicago, I met my husband who was born and raised in San Jose. And I asked for a transfer because I always said that I will move around, but eventually I want to come back to California. So the company moved me back to California. we ended up getting married. I wanted to have kids like right away. And I miscarried my first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So that would have been like the next, oh shit, you know.
Yeah.
Total downward spiral, I would say. There was a depression that I didn't know I was depressed.
Yeah.
But I was depressed because it was all unexplained. And then we couldn't get pregnant for so long. Oof. So it took over 2 years to have my son.
Wow.
And then when he was 4 months old, we found out we were pregnant again.
Classic. That's an absolute
classic.
So
my kids are a year and 3 weeks apart.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I have a friend who was trying for a child for 5 years, IVF, absolutely everything. You see where this is going. They decided forget it. The IVF wasn't working. They were told they're never having kids. So they adopted. And they adopted a beautiful few months old baby, and then found out they were pregnant as soon as they adopted the baby. And so they had.
I have friends who did
so
the same.
They had two kids who were like 6 months apart in age. And when they were like registering them for schools and stuff, people were like, what's that now? how's that work? Isn't that amazing? It happens. Because
yeah.
I think,
it does.
I don't know, the body's like, well, the pressure's off. The pressure's off.
Yeah.
The body changes. And here we, you know, I'm ready now. I'm ready to conceive now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had them.
Wow.
We have them.
Wow.
And I think those years were a blur. Now it's I don't want to say it's easy, but it's nice that they have built-in buddies.
Of course.
You know, everything happens at the same time. Boy first, girl second. And yet they were walking at the same time. They potty trained at the same time. So
that
was the fairly easy part.
Mm.
But then I was laid off from my corporate job while they were babies.
Wow.
I was laid off twice.
Wow.
So at that point, I said, what is it that I can do where we don't have a nanny? I'm not traveling. We're not bringing a nanny to travel with us. Like something that isn't... I felt like I loved my job because I love the people, but I felt like I wasn't doing anything to make the world a better place for them.
Yeah.
And that's when I discovered podcasting and started my own business.
Oh, very good. Wow.
Yeah.
So okay, amazing. So you lost your full-time corporate job and then looked for like a bit of an avenue and a pivot and thought, I'm going to start a new business, which is podcasting.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was on this whole, you know, what am I going to do? What's my purpose?
Yeah.
And a woman from my birthing class for my son said, there's this new podcast. She is a life and business coach. I think you might like her. Mm. And I went, how do you listen to one?
Yeah.
This is 2018.
Yeah.
I had an iPhone, but I didn't know that you could just listen from your phone.
Yeah.
And I started listening and I was like, oh yeah, we all have a purpose and a passion. I don't know what that is for me, but I'm going to find out. And she ended up reaching out to me and said, you like what I'm putting out there because you keep posting about it.
Mm.
Do you want to pitch me to be on other podcasts?
Mm.
And I was like, well, yes, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And so I learned everything that there was that goes into producing a show.
Wow.
I launched my own show.
Wow.
But I fell in love with pitching because I loved hearing the stories of others, being able to share the stories of others and to see what that does for a podcast listener.
Yeah.
You know, somebody could be listening to us right now and I don't know what they're going to get out of it, but to see that you can overcome things and be a healthy individual at the end, mentally, physically, then, you know, that could give someone inspiration and hope. So that's what I love. And I feel like it actually is doing something for the world, for my children and their future.
I agree with that. And I think like the whole purpose of this podcast, which is now, what are we in our, we're in our fourth year, amazingly. Is inspiration and hope. That's the whole purpose. And it's like not me and Kyle, who's the co-host, talking about ourselves, but relating to things that we've been through, but having guests on that have been through all sorts of stuff. And knowing that a lot of the listeners are in a pickle. They're having a fucking shit time. You know, whether they're traumatized and don't know it, whether they're in the midst of alcoholism, whether they're in an abusive relationship, whether they're lacking in any confidence or too scared to go outside or they've lost their job or they've been in an accident or, you know, there are people out there that have recovered and are on the show to talk about the fucking depths of doom that they were in and where they are today. And it gives people hope because when you're in that whole, it's really horrible. And there is often some thinking that you can't ever get out of it. You know, and I'm a testament to that. And that's why we started the show, to let people know that if we can do it, anyone can do it. Do you know what I mean? So do you go on multiple podcasts and tell your story, or do you find guests to go on other podcasts, or how does that work in your world of podcasting?
I do both. The business is getting clients to be interviewed on other shows. Mm. So that is what my agency does. I have one teammate. My show is about how your past and your present don't define your future, that's up to you.
Wow, I love that.
So everybody shares the pivots, the journeys. Nobody has not had a pivot somewhere along the line, no matter what it was. Yeah. So I love to, you know, talk about what is that? What does that look like? Yeah. If I have an author on, I'm like, well, what do you do? Like, how do you come up with these things? What's your ritual? And they're all different. Yeah. And so I love to explore what these differences are, and to, again, just like you, give hope that, you know, if you want to do something, you can totally do it.
Yeah.
I just wrote a book that comes out next week.
And what? Congrats.
It's How to Get on Podcasts.
That's amazing.
It's these little things of like, if you want to do it, then go do it.
Yeah.
You can do it. And that's always how I've been.
I think it's really hard when people who have a dream or want to do stuff who don't have the confidence to do it, I think it's really hard for them to understand that it's achievable. So I was, all I ever did was work for a company. I mean, I still do for my day job, but now I've got all these things for me that I've got going on. And I was always the person that was looking at other people starting a business or doing this or doing that, being like, how do they have the guts or how do they have the balls to do that? Like, why is it always me looking out from the outside looking in? I'm a good person. I'm clever. Why can't I find the confidence to make these things happen for me? And it was all in there. It was all in there all along, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And that's my hope, is that people can see that and go after it. You know, it takes time. None of this was overnight.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there are hiccups along the way. So, you know, in writing my book, while I'm, you know, just going on my merry way, I had my 41st birthday. Mm. And the next night I woke up with a pain in my back, and I thought it was a pinched nerve.
I was about to say, this seems like a really good time to discuss the health thing that we've been teasing. So very nice. Good timing here. Very nice timing.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
So tell me, a pinched nerve in your back. But not a pinched nerve.
Right. It felt like a pinched nerve, like when I was pregnant. That was what it was reminiscent of. And I kept moving to the side. And I was like, this isn't working. And I told my husband, like, you know, I'm just not feeling good. I feel kind of blah, and my back really hurts. Oof. And I did some yoga poses. I Googled, you know, leaning against the couch backwards. I was doing all these things. I could not lie flat on my back on the floor. And I had heating pads. I took a muscle relaxer. And I was like, this is really messed up.
Yeah.
And I called my doctor on Monday morning. And they said, we can't fit you in till maybe Friday.
Oof, classic.
And I went, okay. And they go, but keep calling.
Yeah, okay. Classic. Helpful. So
that was a Monday. So Monday night, we're watching Below Deck because I'm a reality TV junkie.
Same here. Just to let you know, we're Bravo junkies over here. So don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
Huge Bravo junkies. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So we'll talk later about correct. I have a client she's going to be on Heather McDonald's show to talk about The Real Housewives.
Great. I'm right. Stoked. Yeah. I know we're talking about your health crisis, but just to quickly, like, anything and everything from Southern Charm, Below Deck, Summer House. Oh my God, we're obsessed. Real Housewives of any single part of America in the history of the universe. Yeah, so that's Sunday viewing for us. And then I'll have like sports on my iPad or my phone, and my girlfriend will have Bravo or whatever the show is on the big screen. And we're like, this is life for us now. This is great.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. We would get along beautifully.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us. So you're realizing this isn't just a pinched nerve and something's going on.
Yeah. And I shot up off the couch in the middle of Below Deck because I had this huge pain.
Oof.
And my husband goes, we should take you to the ER. And I went, no, the kids are asleep. Like, who's going to take care of our children we can't wake them up and bring them to the hospital. I said, no, I'll figure this out. I'm going to sleep on the couch.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. Oof. And at 4 a.m, I emailed the doctor again and I said, look, I am emailing you at 4 a.m. to let you know that I'm calling you at 8 a.m. Yeah. I need to be seen. Yeah. I am in pain.
Yeah.
Called again. And we can't see you.
That's unbelievable.
I said, at this point, I will see a janitor. Yeah. I don't care who can see me, but someone needs to see me. And she said, there's nobody here to see you.
That's awful.
And I took a nap and I had a heating pad. I even posted on Instagram, I'm in pain, but working from my bed.
Oh my God.
And in that afternoon, I hobbled to my husband's office at home and I said, I can't take it anymore. We got to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And we went in, and I didn't know if it's an automated check-in. You know, you punch in what you're, what's going on. They scan your stuff.
Yeah.
Before I was finished scanning my ID, they, Michelle, are you here? And I went, yeah.
Wow.
Come on back. And I was like, well, something must be really wrong with me. Like, this is such treatment.
Yeah.
And a doctor came right away. She was very young. And she goes, do you have any blood clots? I went, no, what? No, it's a pinched nerve, lady. Yeah. It is something in my back. It's not my legs.
Yeah.
She goes, well, we're going to do an x-ray. We're going to, you know, run some blood tests. We're going to do this. I forgot my phone because that's how much pain. So my husband gave me one of his, I had his personal phone. Yeah. He had his work phone.
Yeah.
And so we were texting. I said, you, at this time, go home because I don't know what's going on.
Could take a while. Yeah.
They did. Yeah. They then did, there's called a D-timer. It's a blood test and it looks for some number for blood clots.
Yep.
And my number came back elevated. So they gave me a CT scan and my lungs were filled with blood clots.
Get the fuck out of here.
So as soon as they saw that, and I couldn't even lie down on the table, I was crying. I felt so bad for the tech. I'm like, you got to help me off the table.
Wow.
I'm in pain. They're bringing me boxes of Kleenex. As soon as the doctor saw the scan, I was hooked up to Eliquis. You know, they were IV dripping that stuff right away. They didn't have a bed. So I stayed in the ER for a while longer. By then, my husband came. I said, they're admitting me.
Wow.
He had my phone, you know, change of clothes. And then I was in the hospital for 5 days.
Jesus. How?
They said.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry, carry on.
Well, the ER doctor said, if I had listened to my doctor's office and waited until Friday, I would have died.
Yeah. Yeah. What do blood clots of the lungs do? Like, why are they there? And do they move? And can they go and turn into, you know, because I know with some blood clots, they travel through your body and they get to your heart or they get to your brain and you die of a stroke or a heart attack. Is it the same in the lungs?
I had one that was in the inferior vena cava and they were afraid it was going to shoot to my heart. So I had a thrombectomy, which was another scary thing because there was a hematologist who's the head of oncology at Stanford, who was my doctor, still is. I adore him. I thank God he came into the room and had rounds that day.
Wow.
But the man who was the doctor to do the thrombectomy said, this is what we're going to do. We go through your groin and we suck out the clot.
Oh my God.
And I said, okay, well, what are the risks? Well, the risk is that the clot decides to escape and goes to your heart anyway.
Oh, wow.
And you die. And I went, well, that's the, like, this is what you're giving me?
Yeah.
Fuck. So he left the room and I didn't know what to do. So I started transferring money. I went into my business account because I knew that if I didn't, then who knows, you know, how long my husband would have to wait to get access to that. And I didn't want that to happen. So I started moving money into personal accounts to make sure that that was at least not a worry.
Bloody hell.
The next day, the doctor comes and he says, you know, I went home and I thought about you asking what the risk is. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go in through your neck and put a filter in that will stop it if it decides to escape. And I went, well, how in the hell is this not standard procedure?
Oh, my goodness.
So I went through the thrombectomy. And wouldn't you know, I am the type who I need a lot of anesthesia.
Mm.
I've known this since I had my wisdom teeth. I'm like, keep shooting it up.
Mm.
I woke up as they pulled the clot out and they said, wow, look at this. And I started talking to the doctors and I scared the shit out of them.
Oh my, I'm literally like, you can see my body. I'm so tense right now listening to this.
Yeah.
Firstly,
my husband's like, don't tell me this.
But fuck, that is horrific. I like that you're talking about this at the end of the episode. I'm like, this is talk about a cliffhanger. I feel like my neck. Okay. So then what? They knock you out again?
No, by this time, like, this is the end. They just have to stitch me up and I'm good. And so I said, can you just make sure I can see it as we're leaving? I'd like to see what it is that you just pulled out of me that was almost going to kill me. And so they showed me, you know, in a little jar of what it looked like. Yeah. So I could, you know, look
it's like
at
a
it.
Little ball of like dried blood. I'm imagining a clot. Is it? Is it black? Like, what's the deal?
No, it was kind of grayish and it was like a tube. It was long.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was big. So I stayed a little longer because they couldn't get the oxygen tanks delivered to my house in time.
My God.
And then I was on oxygen for 30 days and I was on blood thinners for a year.
Right.
I've been cleared and it's been called unexplained.
I was going to say
pulmonary embolism.
And that can kill you in a second. Yeah. I know what that is. And I was going to say why, but it sounds like they don't know because you know?
Their best guess is that it was birth control pills.
Oh, shit.
Because I had, in January of 2021, I had cramps in my legs. And my OBGYN was not in, so I saw a substitute for her. And she said, well, I think it's some estrogen and you have some excess, so I'm going to put you on birth control. I didn't need to be put on birth control, but she gave it to me anyway. And 6 months later, almost to the day, I had a pulmonary embolism.
Well, congratulations on being alive.
Thank you.
That's no small feat, is it? That's quite traumatizing. How are you dealing with that?
It is.
Like, are there...
therapy,
is back pain,
first of all.
How is back pain when that happens? It must be freak the shit out of you.
It does, and it still does. And I now have... When I get overly stressed, I get the phantom pains.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's why this is why I love the hematologist I have, because I told him, I'm like, something's... Like, give me another scan. Something's really fucked up. I keep having these pains. So he did give me another CT scan where they give you the injection so that you have the, I forget what it's called. It's the stuff, that the dye that goes in you to see if there are any. And there were none.
Yeah.
But I get the pain if I'm under any kind of stress.
The brain is
And so my therapist is wonderful. My doctor is wonderful because this is still there. And so it's always in the back of your head of, oh, shit, am I having another one?
Oh,
like,
goodness.
What do I do now?
Yeah. I think we kind of need to wrap up, but I've got quite a deep question for you. And that is, when the doctor left you and said the risk is death, and if the clots move, it'll be the end of that, and you started moving money, did you go through a process of like thinking about you not being there and your kids and stuff like that when you're transferring the money? Or was it more kind of functional? And more like I'm moving money and not getting caught up in the emotion of it all. Like,
it was both. And this is the part that's going to make me cry. Because
I see you welling up there. I give you a good question.
I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, I had these tiny humans that I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I knew that I wasn't ready and I didn't want to imagine life for them like that. And so knowing that there was nothing that I could do.
Horrible.
Moving money was the only thing that I knew that I could actually physically do.
I mean, I'm feeling everything you're saying. I think about my kids and, you know, how much they, I mean, thankfully now, obviously not saying now's gonna be a great time for me to, you know, have a cardiac arrest or anything, but my 13 and a half year old is much more independent. My 10-year-old is still very much a beautiful kid who just beholds me in everything I do. You know, as you start to see their independence, it starts to get, for me, it started to get a bit easier as a parent. I got so freaked out when I became a dad. Like, how am I supposed to do the best I can for these children? I'm not equipped to do it. I think a lot of parents go through that, but I think children who have been left or traumatized or have had emotional struggles with their parents, it's even harder because you want your children to have everything, to feel the love and inclusion and everything maybe you didn't feel you had. So just to imagine you not being there and leaving them is horrible. It's like a nightmare of mine, you know?
Yeah.
Bloody
and, you know, you see those videos or you read articles about, you know, the mother who has cancer, who knows, and then she makes videos for her child and diaries. And yet I was like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
This could happen in less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing that I can leave behind.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. Gosh. Okay. Let's try and finish on a more, in all honesty, I think this is amazing. It's an amazing place to end because you're here, right? You're here.
Yeah.
Your kids are safe. You're on an amazing journey today. Right? How do you feel like about where you are in your life today? That's a good question. It doesn't need to all be positive, but how do you feel when you look through what you've been through and where you are now and what the journey you're on? How does that make you feel?
Proud.
Yeah.
I've overcome a lot more than I give myself credit for.
Yeah.
I think that's true for many of us. You know, coming on today, I was like, okay, I'm going to talk about my health scare.
Yeah.
And then as I continue to think about it, and then as we're talking, I'm like, well, shit, there's a lot, you know, there truly is a lot. And I think, especially in my case, I kind of brush over it.
Yeah.
That this was just my life. Like what, there's no big deal to it. And I think this is true for many people of, you know, we ask what makes me special or why is my story special?
Yeah.
Well, you've overcome a lot more than you realize and it's created the person you are today. And that's something that should be celebrated. And so everything I do, I celebrate with my family. You know, unboxing the book, everybody's celebrating and we do it together as a family and everything is a celebration. And, you know, my kids are they're now very cognizant of, are we healthy? Like, are you okay? Which is sad. And I don't want them to grow up like that, but I have to, it's also good for me to remind them that, you know, I have to go on the treadmill and exercise and keep healthy because I don't want to end up in the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there's still yet to come bigger things that will be, you know, happening. I feel that there's more to come.
Yeah.
And my journey's nowhere near done.
Same. That's how I feel. I feel like I'm at the very beginning, right? Like it's like a rebirth happened 6 years ago for me when I, you know, my father died. I lost, my marriage ended. It was horrendous. I literally drank myself to death. Lost my house. Didn't have anywhere to live. It was horrendous. And now I look back on that. I feel like that doesn't seem that was me. Like though, even the 2 decades that preceded that, it felt like there was an imposter in my brain, like trying to continuously tell me that I deserve nothing more than to be homeless and drinking myself to death, you know? And now I'm like, oh, now I'm starting to feel maybe the things that I should have felt 30, 40 years ago. And it feels nice.
Yeah.
It feels good to feel good. And it feels good it feels good to feel that you are deserving of good things and you are deserving of happiness. Because if a lot of people tell you that you're not deserving of anything enough, you start to believe them. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Oh my God, this has been such a good conversation, hasn't it?
I know. I am so thrilled to have gotten to meet you and to talk to you. I love it. I want to be friends forever, Lee.
Same. I'm in. This is what happens. We've got a bond now, a connection forever. I'm friends with about 3 or 4. I mean, I'm quite picky, you know, 100 guests, maybe 3 or 4. We're still very much in touch. I've even met up with a couple of them. There's a chap called Sam Led who lives in Santa Barbara, actually. He came on to talk about ADHD and how he was excluded as a child. And, we meet up for coffee in Venice and, you know, wonderful. Bring it on.
I love it.
Because guess what? We're all like-minded human beings on a similar journey. And, you know, not to sound like we're all up ourselves, but what you said, everyone, every single human has gone through or is going through trauma. And is going through something. Some people will just never know. Some people will be miserable. Some people will be half miserable, but get through their lives. Some people turn to drink and drugs. There's an out. There's an out. And there's a way that you can start to feel alive again. Right. And that's what I'm doing. That's how I'm feeling these days. And, you know, it feels really good.
I love it. I love hearing your journey.
Same. I love
congratulations
hearing,
to you.
I love hearing your journey. We're going to wrap up. I'm going to try and say your last name again, Michelle Glogovac.
Yes.
Shit, yep. I got it. Okay. So In the show notes for our listeners, there'll be a little bio of you, and there'll be a link to, let's say, your book when it's out, your podcast, your agency, where you are, any social that you care to share with us. Listeners, go to the show notes. You can find all the information about Michelle. And just remains for me to say thank you so much for coming on the show. And guess what? You are the first guest of season 4 in 2024.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We started off on a really good note, so I'm very happy with that. Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much.